You know, when we talk about the high school shootings and the need to provide outlets for young people, and obviously your work very much based on that, our work here very much based on that, yet we seem to be headed in the opposite direction as a country. The things that you and I hold dear don't seem to be reflected by the dominant subculture, and especially by the people recently put into power in this country. What do you say? Are we headed for a tremendous crisis? Are we wrong? Are we the crazy ones, or what's going on?
It's so complex. You know, it's so complex, and they're very strange agendas at work. And I think the agenda of, you know, that Alan would see, I think, comes out of a kind of fear and paranoia, a lack of candor, an agenda of power that just, you know, feeds the already overfed beast, the, you know, the kind of Moloch figure that he conjures, the deals, the incredible deals, the backroom deals, the, you know, real greed, number one. And then I think the ideology of some, and I, you know, it's hard to argue that. It's not a united front by any means. I think in our current spectrum that we have, you know, things are starting to crack already. The lack of integrity, the lack of, you know, compassion. You know, every day we're talking about the 201 here, 2001. There's some, you know, incredible blow at the people.
Yeah, the real crisis is that the people in power are not listening to what Americans want. There's more wisdom in the basic population than is evident coming out of the administration. And when you ask about Alan's, what he stood for, what his poetry had to present, he had a fundamental trust in the wisdom of an individual, that if they heard information that was real and had it presented to them in a way that was personable and colloquial and directed at them as intelligent human beings, that they would be able to make their own choices. And this is very much in contradistinction to what the media outlets tend to be presenting as they get their briefings from the White House or from the administrative figures. I mean, if there's a crisis right now, it's that we have an administration moving in one direction that the mass of the people are beginning to question very seriously. Why should we have more arsenic in our water? Why aren't we concerned about global warming? Global warming is on the cover of Time magazine, and yet we have a president in the White House who disputes that it even exists.
And I think the message now is not to get depressed, and I have to fight this myself every day and realize it's, you know, one point you think, well, this is what the people want, this is what everybody wants. Of course, they're not even getting the information, so this is why education, the particulars are so important, working with younger people so they're not just becoming, you know, isolated and in a kind of, you know, denial around being what it is to be human, and we have to save our humanity. But I, you know, I feel I have to fight every day a kind of, you know, depression or thinking that, you know, we've sunk so low or the culture's so dumbed down that there's no fresh air in there, that there's no place for what we do. And of course, we know that's not true. I mean, we know it. It's belied with everything we've been doing this weekend.
Easy to get this fatalistic sort of sense and just say, forget about it, I'm giving up, the world is crazy, and I'm just going to ease the pain with something besides poetry, something that
right.
has the negative
right.
Side effects.
Yeah. Well, also I wanted to mention the weaponry. I mean, this is another major front that Alan would be still active on, which is gun control. And, I mean, this is, you know, you're providing, you're making these things just too available and too glamorized. And
it seems shocking to me that we spend so much money on defense and nobody's talking about it.
Right.
I mean, it
right.
just seems absolutely ludicrous, the amounts that we're spending. The amounts were set by the Cold War. 50% of our defense spending was allegedly set to repel a Soviet nuclear attack. Now we don't even have the Soviet Union anymore. And they say, well, there are always these
There's
kinds
always
of threats.
An enemy. And that's the, in Buddhist terminology, it's the war in God realm. And if you don't have an enemy, you create them. And, you know, you have to have that thing to work against. So that's what we're seeing with the, you know, whether it's situation with China now, creating more of a problem than there actually is. We're going to see.
But
with,
it's also not true that nobody's talking about it. There are people who are studying it, investigating and talking about it, and poets and alternative journalists and alternative radio. Those are all the outlets now that we have, and we have to really
support
get focused
them.
On supporting these and funding them and supporting the individuals, both personally and financially, who are doing the hard work, because there's plenty of information available. It's a question of getting this information out. And that's where you feel very strongly the death of somebody like Allen Ginsberg, who had the capability of really getting word out
Planet
to
News.
Large numbers
Planet
of people.
News.
Yeah, he had the attention of a large segment of the population.
And yet now with his death, he's everywhere.
With his death, he's everywhere, but others have to pick up the ball
carry the flame
it,
on,
you know.
Absolutely.
Well, from war to war of a different kind, and your latest book, Marriage. You know, and I say that, you know, tongue-in-cheek and having gone through one marriage and in another committed relationship, but there is a lot of war imagery in the book, isn't there?
Well, there's the war between the sentence and the poem sentence. There's the war of the sexes. I see it as a very political, polemical book. It's describing and celebrating and playing around all kinds of marriages, same-sex marriages, marriages with transgendered people, marriages of common law situation, examining the roots of marriage in the sense of property and ownership and patriarchy and so on. So it's a deconstruction in a way, as well as a construction through using the sentence as a kind of ploy to get at the contract, so to speak.
Yeah, and a sentence works in a couple of different ways. Of course, the unit of speech, the sentence, the unit of writing, but also a sentence, like
right,
something you have to serve.
Right, a prison sentence.
Exactly.
You got to serve somebody.
That's it. Amen, sister. Okay, so speaking of that and the politics, why not Darko Knight, which is one of the best pieces in the book, one of the ones I enjoy the most anyway.
Good, okay. Darko Knight. In some places, a woman would marry a woman, which torques the definition of marriage. Would it be so simple, any such definition? For they throw stones at you and the torqued definition of marriage. It hurts to be unkind, they say, and cast a stone. Or someone had a man take a slug at her on an emotional national holiday because she was a known lover of women who had a wife. And it was a man's holiday, a memorial day for dead warriors who were most especially in the two wars, men. Or maybe she, the woman slugged, was a wife. This is a two wives tale. It was unseemly to see two women kissing, two women embrace under the primrose tree, two women in a Lautrec brothel holding the tide together against the slings of men, caressing against the tide of pimps and other men. Some get murderous in Oregon to see the women, too, shopping together as might a man and wife, living as do a man and wife in an ordinary man and wife apartment, doing man and wife things. Except at night, in the deep dark of night, they said, they who were murderous and dark. What do they do at night while we are doing our man and wife things? What do they do in the dark of night? What do they do?
And that is the fascination, isn't it? That's just absolutely beautiful. I guess, what can you say? It's something about the book. In the syntax of it, how it's just broken up so beautifully. How was that created? What process, and I know you work with many different processes on different projects, but what process was used to get the kind of language and the fractured syntax that is one of the most beautiful aspects of the book?
Well, I was working with the prose poem form and had that in mind, and I think, you know, it was very fine-tuned because I was really hearing these sentences in my head, and I wanted to push on them and sort of interrupt them and have this, as I was saying, this kind of argument continue. There's a lot of discussion about cross-genre now and what is poetry and what is prose, and prose has really broken down in a way, so I could apply a lot of the things I would do in my poetry to the sentence. So they sort of look like prose, and I was also working with a sense of the haibun, which is a Japanese prose poem form that Andrew Schelling has also worked in, and usually you have a little sort of capping haiku at the end that sums it up. Well, I started to do that, and then those sections became poems that became a kind of poem glue between the prose sections. So in a way, it was exploding out of this traditional form. And then there was a sense of a continuity. I think of the book as one piece, although it's more like a serial poem, but it's also got prose and poetry, and it's interwoven that way. But the fractures were all coming out of, you know, ways I was hearing sentences in my head, and the sense that you do not actually think in complete, perfect grammatical sentences, that there's another way that you're, and so I was trying to pay attention to my own patterns of thought. And they get, you know, it gets very skewed and angular. And in some cases, one sentence is a page, which is something, of course, James Joyce and Henry James and others have explored. So, there's a kind of homage there in the sense of playing with prose.
And the incomplete sentence, of course, something that Charles Olson did well.
And then there's an oral thrust, too, this sense of projecting it out. A lot of these pieces, I want to be heard and I want to be, have them heard aloud.
Excellent. The book is Marriage, a Sentence. It's published by Penguin Books, and more with Anne Waldman and Andrew Schelling. Our guests, they've been the honored guests at the 4th Annual Allen Ginsberg Memorial Open Mic Poetry Marathon. More information about their work on the Naropa website at naropa.edu.